Hey now, welcome to the City Off Campus podcast with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. Our guest today is former Iowa Hawkeye and current Minnesota Vikings quarterback, Nate Stanley. Nate, thanks for joining us. So obviously now you're in the off season. So how are you kind of now taking time off after a long season with COVID and everything?
So I took like a week and a half off. Traveled, saw some family right after the season ended. And actually today just started my workouts again. So took those 2 weeks off to kind of rejuvenate, recharge, and now just going to hit it hard again and get ready for, you know, OTAs and then the upcoming season.
Yeah. So how was your first season in the NFL, especially with COVID and everything? I'm sure a lot of vets told you like a lot of things going on aren't normal. So how did you take that? And yeah, just walk us through that a little bit.
Yeah, it was a lot different than what I was told to expect, obviously, because of COVID. There was a lot of hoops that we had to jump through with testing and everything. So, a lot different than what I expected as far as, kind of the day-to-day interaction. But as far as the actual on-field, practice time spent in meeting rooms, it was what I expected, just with some twists and turns with doing certain things online, being virtual. They had rules on how many people you could have in a room at one time. So, half the time, guys like myself that were on practice squad, we'd be listening and watching our meetings virtually while the starting guys and guys that were backups were all together meeting together. But, outside of that, being virtual and then having to jump through hoops with getting tested and those tracers that we had to wear every day, everything was what I expected. The football aspect was what I expected, being on the field, and then time spent studying, learning the offense, things like that was all pretty similar to what guys told me to expect. So, kind of two worlds. We didn't really have the social aspect of the team outside of the building, because of rules, but when we were in the building, it was pretty normal and everybody did a great job at handling it.
Yeah. So can you walk us through what a regular, like in season, let's say like week 9 day in the life is of not just being an NFL quarterback, but being on the practice squad and all the other responsibilities that entails?
Yeah. So really kind of depends on the day of the week. So our really first day of full team prep was Wednesdays. So if you think about it, like Sundays would normally be our Fridays, and then Mondays we'd have review of the game film, a lift and a workout, and then a little bit of study time, just getting ready for the next opponent. But Wednesdays was really the first full day. So as practice squad players, you had to get a lift in before everything started. So I would get that lift in at 6 o'clock, go to meetings until like from like 7:15 to 10:15. Then we'd have a walkthrough in the morning. So like 10:30 to 11:45, we'd have a walkthrough. Like 10:15 to 11:15, we'd have a walkthrough and then have lunch and then another half hour meetings before practice and then a 2 hour practice after that. And then we'd have a meeting just watching film from that day's practice. After practice, they had dinner at the facility for us. So we'd grab dinner, the quarterbacks would grab dinner, and then we'd go up and watch more film. So some days I wouldn't leave until like 8:15 at night. So it was long days. But as the week went on, the time that you were there went down. So Wednesdays were definitely the longest. Thursdays were a little bit shorter. And then Fridays, football stuff, out on the field, we were done by 12:30, and then I'd leave by 3:30, 4 o'clock. So, and then Saturdays were just a walkthrough review and then travel day if we had to travel. So, definitely long days. But as the week went on, it got shorter and shorter.
Where have you seen a difference in like film study and what you've done after being a year in the pros and what you did while at Iowa? Like how would you compare what you look for now as a practice squad quarterback compared to what you had looked for during your time at Iowa?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference, you know, is kind of dictated by the complexities of defenses. You know, defenses in the NFL, they bring a lot, lot more different blitzes. They play a lot more coverages off of certain blitzes. So that was one thing that I studied a lot, and how our protections played into it. Other than that, I'd say I just picked up on little things that like Kirk and Sean Mannion, who was the backup, because they've both been in the league for, I think Sean's in year six and Kirk was in year 9 or 10. So they see things so fast and it almost forces you to see it the same way. So, I think just the processing speed of watching film, you know, understanding it without having to go back and watch it 4 or 5 times, you know, is something that I got better at. But as far as things that I learned, you know, again, it just goes back to what the defense does. You know, there's only so many things they can do, but there's so many different twists and turns that they can do off of it that make things different. So just kind of understanding those and how our protections picked up certain blitzes and what to expect when you get certain fronts and coverage looks. So, you know, those were things that I got better at. I wouldn't say that I had to learn how to do it from college, because I had really good coaches that helped me learn how to do that while I was in college. It was a little more in depth.
Being in a quarterback room with two vets, with Kirk and Sean, what have you learned from them so far when you were in the quarterback room with them or on the practice field?
I think just the way that they go about studying, you know, they're just so methodical with how they study our game plan, you know, study, you know, if we have a certain play, you could get 4 or 5 different looks from the defense. Okay, if I get this look, I'm doing this. If I get this look, I'm doing this. So they really go through, break down every single read against pretty much every coverage that we could expect that week. You know, if they're going to blitz us and make us hot, you know where to go with the ball. Just having your answers beforehand, you know, is something that again, I think I did in college, but you know, I didn't realize how important it was until I got to the pros and saw how Kirk and Sean both handled studying, you know, and how they went about understanding the game plan and how it intertwined with what the defense was giving you.
So backtracking a little bit to the start to your Iowa career, which was your recruitment process. Mm-hmm. Can you take us into the factors that led you to making up your mind to become a Hawkeye? I mean, you're from Wisconsin, you're a Midwest kid, kind of what led to that decision?
Yeah. So, I only had 2 offers from Wisconsin and Minnesota. And I guess I had one more offer from Pittsburgh when the current Wisconsin head coach was out at Pittsburgh. He offered me at Pittsburgh as well. But the coaching staff that was at Wisconsin before him, I didn't really like them, like the fit that, and like the vibe that they gave me when I went on a recruiting visit there. So that kind of put me off from Wisconsin, and the current head coach there didn't get back there until 2 months before signing day, my senior year. So I had built up a really good relationship with the coaches at Iowa. You know, I felt that they truly cared about me as a person, more so than a football player. And then my mom's from Iowa. My dad's from Illinois, just across the border into Illinois. So I had family close both ways. And then I thought for what I wanted to do in school, which was physical therapy, they had really good program for that and really good programs that led into their PT school. So, you know, I think just a combination of all those things made me feel really comfortable there. You know, and that's why I made the decision to go there.
What were your expectations going into your Iowa career, with CJ Beathard, obviously, as the starter? Mm-hmm. What were kind of your short-term goals at the time? And then what were, obviously, the long-term goals, big picture?
Yeah, you know, obviously, short-term goals going in there my first year, you know, obviously, you don't want to say, oh, I'm just, competing for the backup job. But I think that was really my goal, was to go in and CJ had been a 3-year starter at that, or 2.5-year starter, really. So my goal was really to just go in and compete for that backup position, you know, and put myself in a position, in a good position for the following year when CJ was gone. You know, and I went out there and did that, played in a few games my freshman year, just in like garbage time, not so meaningful plays, but You know, even that little, you know, exposure to playing, you know, I think really helped me, you know, for that following spring ball and following camp when I was competing to get that starting job. Yeah. So, I mean, that was really my goal coming in. And then my goals for my career, obviously, were, you know, win a Big Ten championship, which we didn't do, unfortunately. But then just be a good teammate, be a good leader. You know, once those Big Ten championships were off the table, I think it was really just to keep everybody engaged and how good of a season can we have and how self-motivated can we be to continue to get better every single day. You know, I think that showed every single year that I started. We won one more game than the previous year. So got all the way up to 10 wins, you know, in 2019 with the Holiday Bowl win. But then I guess on a more selfish level, I think I wanted to show that I could play at the next level, you know, statistically, you know, fell short of a couple milestones, you know, with Chuck Long, with passing yards and touchdowns, but I was close on both of them. And, you know, if I would have redshirted, maybe I would have passed those, but who knows? So, you know, I think I didn't really set those goals until I started my first game. But, you know, I think more ultimately the biggest goals were just to, you know, create great relationships with my teammates, which I did. You know, some of my best friends and longest lasting friends I'll have for my life are from Iowa, my teammates. Yeah. So those were really the biggest things for me going in is, you know, how good can the team be? You know, how close can I get with my teammates? And then, you know, can I further my career, you know, playing in the NFL?
So on that topic of like goals, after you had arrived at Iowa, you had quickly realized and found out about this huge rivalry they have with Iowa State.
Mm-hmm.
And during your time as a starter, you never lost to Iowa State, but in each game, it was in their own unique manner. It was a very tough and gritty battle like they always are. What was that rivalry like during your playing career, and did it live up to like that sort of hype that the people who were already in the program, did it live up to that hype that they had set it to when you had arrived?
It definitely did. You know, it probably exceeded my expectations for what that rivalry was like, especially because my freshman year we blew them out. It was like 49-3 or something like that. So I was like, man, is this really a rivalry? But then the next year I quickly found out that, especially we had to go to Ames in my second start ever.
What was that like going to Ames?
Oh my
gosh. What kind of environment was that like?
I mean, I don't know if anybody can really put it into words beforehand, but when you are in the bus almost to Jack Trice Stadium and you see little kids like running alongside the bus, like giving you the finger, like that's like, man, this is real. Like this rivalry, there's no love lost between these two teams. And I mean, and then to go in there and win, you know, is an even better feeling. So, you know, it's a really cool environment, really cool stadium to go play in. And you know, obviously I can say that because when I started, we won both games there. So, you know, I have some really good memories from those games and those games were always closer than what you know, they thought they were going to be, you know, whether it be turnovers here or there that just, you couldn't almost put it away, because of things like that. You know, it was like a flip of a switch. You never knew what was going to happen. And thankfully we were able to, you know, come out on top for those 3 years that I was starting.
What was your favorite memory from those games? Like, was it the punt returner getting smoked by his own blocker? Like Amir's catch, like really, like what was it?
Yeah. You know, I would say my first start was probably my most memorable against those guys, or my first year playing. Primarily because I think we had three drives, three touchdown drives that were all over 85 yards that were really crucial in the game for us to come back and win. You know, and some guys made some spectacular plays, like Akram Wadley made that catch over the middle where he took it like 55 yards, broke a bunch of tackles and things like that. So, you know, I think just the overall environment, you know, one being my second start, two being my first game against Iowa State that was truly meaningful. I played a little bit my freshman year, but we were up by so much that it didn't really matter. And then, You know, three, just the obstacles that we had to overcome in that game, you know, really stand out and, you know, make it really special.
So you started 39 straight games and had a 27-12 record and won three bowl games. So what are some of your favorite regular season games you played as a Hawkeye, and which bowl game is like most memorable or means the most to you?
By far my favorite regular season game is the Ohio State game that we won. You know, again, just the whole environment behind that game, night game in Kinnick against a top ranked team. You know, you can't beat that. So, you know, that's by far my favorite game. And then my favorite bowl game, you know, probably the Outback Bowl, my junior year, or the Holiday Bowl, my senior year. The Outback Bowl the 2019 Outback Bowl, but 2018 season, we had negative rushing yards in that game and still ended up winning. Like, we just big played them. Our defense played great. Yeah, there it is. You got the shirt on. I like it. But if you told me that you're going to go play against an SEC team who has three first round draft picks, you guys aren't going to run the ball at all, and you guys are going to win, I would have said you're crazy. But we found a way to win. Our defense made some big stops late in the game. And then the Holiday Bowl, I don't think anybody picked us to win that game. Really? I remember seeing Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart on TV saying like, there's no way that they're going to play with them. Like, they're not athletic enough and whatever. And then, you know, obviously came out and played really well. Again, our defense played really well. You know, the defense has been crazy the last, they have some stat, like they haven't given up 25 points in the last 22 games or something like that. Like, that's outrageous. And, so, I mean, again, that was just a great, great experience, because I don't think anybody besides our fans and the guys on our team expected us to win. So, it's always great when you can go out and exceed people's expectations and win a game like that.
So going off of what you said with Ohio State, with that win with Iowa State, in a game versus Iowa State, in the Ohio State game, you threw five touchdowns in those games. And then against Indiana, you threw for six touchdowns. Have you ever noticed after those games, if there are any commonalities like that lead to that type of success in your play? Is it the week of preparation, a feeling before the game, or just like an early rhythm you feel?
I think there's a little bit of a rhythm that you feel. Other than that, you know, I think it's really just luck of the draw and whether you have the right play against the right coverage. And we played Indiana, you know, Noah Fant got matched up on a guy in man coverage a couple times, same against Ohio State. You know, there's some luck to be had when it comes to the defense, you know, calling a certain coverage, certain blitz, and then us having the right play against it. So, and then too, sometimes you just have guys make plays for you. You know, like, I'm trying to think, like Noah made a good catch on a inside fade ball against Indiana. TJ made a really good catch for a touchdown in that game. Two really good catches. He made one that he caught in the end zone, one that he took about 50 yards for a touchdown. So, I mean, sometimes you just rely on guys to make plays for you too. But you know, again, that does come back down to the preparation. You know, you feel really confident going into the game, you know, and you feel really confident in those guys to make plays for you. Otherwise you wouldn't throw them the ball in those situations or put them in those situations.
So staying on the topic of offense, and you just named a couple phenomenal players that you had alongside you. What were some things that, Brian Ferentz really focused on your offense and what he wanted that offense to become during your time as the quarterback? And was it anything down to the specifics of like trying to open up the ability to take more shot plays or work through your stars or establish your ground game? Like, what was the thing that he really stressed you guys to effectively execute?
Yeah. You know, Brian, I think he's really good at diagnosing X's and O's. You know, he has a really good idea of what he wants to do for the game plan and where he wants to, you know, our play calling to kind of go. With that being said, he definitely wants to get the ball into playmakers' hands. You know, my junior and senior year, we did a lot for Amir. did a lot to get Tyrone involved, did a lot to get our quick slot guys, you know, matched up one-on-one. You know, so that's really the biggest thing is you really look for those matchups. And again, that comes down to the quarterback to take advantage of them once you see that you have that opportunity. You know, so if I had any questions at all, you know, he would explain to me, you know, what he's thinking, why he's thinking about doing this. And then too, he would listen to my recommendations as well. So going back to the Outback Bowl, we had a play where we motioned TJ back into the backfield and we were going to try to, you know, have him fake lead on a linebacker and run up the middle. You know, if they gave us like split safety coverage, and on the outside, we had just what we call the smack concept. So like it was a stop route with a corner route behind it. And like 2 days before the game, I was like, hey, I don't really like that. What do you think if we changed it to this concept? And in case we did get single high man coverage or cover three, we had to go out and play that concept instead. And he's like, oh yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And then lo and behold, they gave us single high. They busted on the coverage and Nick easily takes it 75 yards for a touchdown. So, you know, I think there was just a really good relationship, really good give and take between us, you know, and really good, you know, relationship between us. He knew what I was thinking. I knew what he was thinking. And then, you know, he trusted me to just go out there and play. You know, our offense wasn't limited, you know, in the game plan sense. You know, we had, you know, empty, we had power, we had, you know, everything that you could think of, you know, and nothing was limited or off the table when it came to game planning.
What for you, like looking back, was the toughest, I wouldn't say toughest, like what was the most anticipated week of preparation for you going into a game against which defense, like which week did you circle and say, all right, like this is going to be a huge challenge. They're going to play us as tough as anyone will this year.
Yeah. Anytime we played Wisconsin, you know, that was up there. You know, obviously I unfortunately never beat them while I was at Iowa. But we played in some really close games, really great games. And then to the Outback Bowl, you know, obviously them having some really high profile guys on their defense. And then when we played Ohio State, you know, they played a lot of man coverage. And we just put it on our guys, said, hey, look, like you're going to be put in positions where you're going to have to win and you're just going to go make plays. So that, and obviously a lot of guys went out and made plays for us. So, yeah, I'd say that those three games or those two games, and then anytime we played Wisconsin, you know, those matchups were always tough and, you know, knew that we had to be at our best to be in the game and to win the game.
And it felt like in any game, it didn't matter like which front was in front of the offensive line, that any time on third and one, like a QB sneak was called, you would without a doubt get 4 yards. Now, did you always know that you were going to get 4 to 5 yards on a QB sneak? Like, did you know that you were going to get, like most people see a sneak and they just hope to get one or two. Our offensive line's capable of getting 4 and 5. Like what's that like as a quarterback? Do you just kind of keep going and then you fall down eventually?
Yeah, I mean, you just keep those legs churning and you know, thankfully I had some great guys up front. You know, Tyler Linderbaum did a great job last year. You know, he drove some nose guards off the ball on those. We also did a lot of different things too, where we'd be in an empty formation and you know, I'd come up to the line of scrimmage like I was faking a check or something, then just get under center and snap it. So like I said, with the game planning and how Coach Brian thought, you know, he thought of some creative ways to do different things. And, you know, that really helped us in the long run because we would sneak in situations where defenses wouldn't think we were going to, like 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3, being a spread out formation and get under center real quick and just snap it and go. So I think we were playing Nebraska in 2019. There was one time where we actually had a D lineman stand up because he thought I was up there to change a play or to check a play. And, you know, he got caught off guard big time. But I think it ultimately just comes down to the offensive line. I think they took a lot of pride in that, especially because early in the year we had some that were like 4 or 5 yard gains. And they're like, man, how good can we be at this? And how often and how well can we do it, especially when they know we're going to do it in certain situations. So, yeah, our offensive line took a lot of pride in that and did a great job all year with that.
So it's safe to say that Iowa is QB sneak you.
I would say so. Say so for sure.
So, and you just alluded to Tyler Linderbaum, and he's, I mean, the guy is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You also played with James Daniels, and he was your center for, was it one season or two?
For one season.
For one. Yeah. What similarities do you see between both of them, and how does playing with someone so reliable at center help you just during your entire process of trying to execute a play?
Yeah, you know, it's huge because they have to communicate a lot at the line of scrimmage, and so does the quarterback. So if they lined up in something that I wasn't quite sure of, or like something that wasn't a scouted look that we hadn't prepared for, James and Tyler will both get us in the right blocking scheme or put the mic somewhere where we need it for a certain protection. So that comfortability was awesome to know that, you know, if I was wrong, they were going to help me and we were going to figure it out. And then too, those guys were just so quick that it gave us a lot of freedom to do a lot of different things blocking scheme wise with them because they're so good. And then too, just being comfortable back there in the pocket, knowing that you're not going to have any pressure coming up the middle, just lets you sit there and go through your reads and not have to worry about that. So both those guys did a really good job with that. And, you know, I think Tyler's going to just continue to get better and better as he goes.
When you needed a big play and you had guys like Hockenson, Fant, Amir Smith, you know, so many other guys, mm-hmm. who were some of your like favorite go-to guys where if you needed a play, you just knew they were going to make it. And if you can point out a specific moment or play for us with a teammate or something, that's one of your favorite highlights. Feel free to include that.
Yeah. Well, I think if I was just going to throw like a go ball down the field, you know, Brandon Smith was definitely up there. I knew he was going to go up and get the ball. You know, there was one against Minnesota 2018 where he just went up and I underthrew the ball, but he went back, fought for it, made a great catch. He had one against Iowa State that same year. Really big play. It was a really close game. It was like 3-3 third quarter. Threw a go ball and he went and got it, made a great play. Made some great plays on some fade balls that I threw him. You know, Andy did this year too. With Spencer, if we just needed to run by somebody, Amir was always a great option. We'd run a lot of post balls with him. He'd go get it. And he would just make a lot of people miss on routine plays too. If you threw an out route to him, he had the chance to outrun the guy to the sideline and just take it, you know, to the house wherever he was at on the field. And then in the red zone, TJ was a great target. You know, he caught a lot of touchdowns in the red zone. I alluded to that touchdown that he caught against Indiana earlier, but he made a great catch. It was up on the top shelf. He went up, caught it, got his foot in bounds and maintained possession of that ball. So, you know, and then too, Noah would get mismatches on linebackers or safeties where he could just run by him and go make a play too. You know, that happened in the Ohio State game. You know, the touchdown that he caught down in the corner of the end zone by the student section, you know, he just ran by the guy. I think that defender was expecting it. So he was just a freak athlete and was able to do that on multiple occasions. So yeah, I mean, all those guys, I felt really comfortable throwing the ball to, especially down the field. But if I was just going to say, I'm going to throw a fade route to somebody, you know, Brandon was the guy. He's tall. He can jump. He's strong. He's not going to let the defender make a play on the ball.
Going back to your college career. So it's a noon game at Kinnick on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. What's your pre-game routine?
Go down to breakfast. You know, I'm trying to remember what I'd eat for breakfast. Probably some eggs and some hash browns. It was my go-to. Then just go take a shower and wait till we go get on the bus. Once I was on the bus, throw on some music.
What was the music?
I mean, I'm a big country fan. I'd listen to country, listen to Eminem a little bit of Drake. But it was mostly country or rock. But then the one song I had to have playing as I did the Hawk Walk was Lose Yourself by Eminem. I had it playing every single time. I just blare it. I didn't really hear anybody as I walked in. So I had the same spot every single time. We got to the speech and hearing building right by the hospital. I'd start it, and then it would be playing at the same point every single time I was going through the hawk walk. But then we had like 20 minutes once we got into the locker room until we went out and took the field for like our I'll say just pre-warm-ups, because we weren't in pads or anything yet. We'd go get loose, throw a little bit, and then I tried to keep it the same, put my pads on at a certain amount of time before we were supposed to go out, you know, things like that. So but once I was in the locker room, I kind of just read the program that we were given, just looked through it, and then just went through our normal warm-up once it was time to go out.
So with games like, you know, early, middle November, when it's absolutely awful to be in Iowa City outside.
Yeah.
How did you bear through that weather and, you know, be able to perform and win games?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was honestly probably easier for the guys that played, than for the fans, even, because we had those heated benches on the sideline. We had those big coats. So, I mean, it was cold when you're out on the field, but once you got off, you could go sit on the bench, those heated benches. Other than that, I just try to tell myself, like, you know, you've got like, you'll be out for like 10 minutes and then you get to go sit on the bench, warm up a little bit. So, I keep telling myself that it wasn't too bad. And one thing is, I never wore sleeves when I played. I always thought like it made me more susceptible to fumbling if I did have to run with it, you know, with slippery sleeves or whatever. So, and then, nobody else on the field would wear them too, because like our receivers coach didn't let receivers wear sleeves. Didn't let our running backs wear sleeves.
You didn't want to be the only one out there.
I didn't want to be the only guy out there on the field that was wearing sleeves. So then obviously the old line, they kind of just pride themselves in not wearing sleeves. So, you just being out there with your teammates, knowing that you're all dealing with the same thing. And then too, the other team's got to play in the same weather that you are. So, but I don't think people realize how nice those heated benches are and those coats that we got to wear.
What was it? Was it your junior year that you guys went to Penn State and played, or your senior year?
That was junior year.
Junior year. So that wasn't that pretty, the weather pretty shitty for that one too? Like,
yeah, it was like rainy the whole time.
Yeah.
Just drizzle. The field was really muddy, and slippery. All right,
so combine that with the fact that you're in Happy Valley. They got 100,000 plus. Like, what was that? What, like, when you walk out on the field, what's the first thing that goes through your head when you hear that many people yelling at you? And you're like, there's no way I have an efficient day in this shitty conditions with these people just screaming at me the entire time.
Yeah. Kind of the same mindset that I said about the cold. You just got to say, like, tell yourself, you just got to go out and do it. You got to deal with it. They got to play in the same weather as you. You practice for loud situations, you practice going on silent cadence, you practice all those things. You just got to rely on what you practiced and, just deal with it. Unfortunately, I busted my thumb in that game. Unfortunately didn't have the best game in my career, arguably one of the worst games of my career, but, it was a really cool experience to go play there. Just see the stadium, playing that in front of that many people. You just got to take it in and enjoy the moment. That's my thing was, whenever I went to a new stadium, I like to just, enjoy it. I don't think there's another stadium like Kinnick, but anytime you get to go to a new stadium, really just enjoy it, because you might play there only one time in your career. So, but going back to the field conditions and the number of people, you just got to tell yourself, they're dealing with it too. I'm just going to go out here and do it. And we're going to do our best.
What do you say to yourself after a game like that? Like you alluded to, I don't know how many people would have a really good game in those conditions, to be honest, but like, what do you say to yourself Saturday night going into Sunday, rolling into the next week? Like you just said it yourself, like you personally felt like that was one of your worst games. Mm-hmm. in that type of environment and the magnitude of a game, like, what do you say to yourself just to turn the page and go to the next week?
Yeah. Early in my career, I really struggled with that. Especially seeing things on social media. One thing I told myself is you can't look at social media. Just delete it for like a few days. Don't look at it. And then just really rely on your teammates. I had multiple teammates come up after the game and tell me like, hey man, you're our guy. We trust in you. We know what you put in. We know the work that you do, for this team, and we trust in you. So, hearing that from your teammates was really great. Especially because you are really I would have been 21 at the time, in your lowest point of your athletic career. To hear that you have the support of your teammates, is really what I needed. And that helped me kind of frame my mindset. Like, just like I said, going into the game, you got to deal with the situation, you got to deal with the circumstances. Coming out of the game, it's the same mindset. And hearing my teammates, telling me that they still have my back, they still believed in me, really helped me get back in that mindset. It happened, it's done, we're gonna learn from it, we're gonna move on. We're just gonna go get the next game. So just a combination of my teammates really helping me in those situations, and then some strategies to limit the exposure of what I saw, what people were saying, really helped me kind of just get back on the horse and get ready for the next day and the next opponent.
When you turned it on, you ended your career being the second in all-time passing yards and touchdowns, just to name a few of the things you marked your name in the Iowa record books. So what does it mean for you to have those type of kind of have your mark on Iowa football and, be with Chuck Long, Ricky Stanzi, some of those guys, between that or anything else you've achieved, what's your biggest accomplishment as the quarterback for the Iowa Hawkeyes?
Yeah. Obviously those individual statistics are great. And like I said earlier too, a lot of those touchdowns that I threw and a lot of those passing yards that I had came from my teammates just giving really great effort on some of those plays. Like, some guys made incredible catches, incredible runs after the catch out in the open field, to kind of accumulate those things for me. I'm really grateful to them for those. I would say just my biggest accomplishment and that I'm most proud of is again, just the relationships that I made with my teammates, and then just the overall record or the trajectory that we moved on when I was a starter, going from 8 wins with the bowl win, 9 to 9 and then to 10. That's really, really what I'm most proud of, especially because, a lot of those games, like I said, the Outback Bowl and the Holiday Bowl, we weren't expected to win. Everybody was telling us, we're not going to win. So just winning those games really just those bowl wins. I think it had been like 5 years since a team had won, when we won the Pinstripe Bowl. It had been 5 years since an Iowa team had won one. I think just really, really ending the season on a high note every year that I was a starter was awesome. And then, getting to that 10 win mark my senior year.
What was like the absolute hardest hit you'd ever taken in college?
Yeah.
What did you say to yourself right then?
The quarterback draw that we ran on the 2-point conversion against Wisconsin. You can hear that one on the TV. Mm-hmm. That one was pretty brutal. And then actually my first pass, it was definitely my first interception in college. I don't know. I can't remember how it got messed up, but the protection got messed up. And then I was throwing the ball and a DN was free, and it looked really bad on tape and on the TV copy. It looked really, really bad. But thankfully it wasn't that bad. Sometimes those ones are the ones that hurt the least. Even though people would think like, man, how is he getting up from that hit? But no, definitely that hit that I took against Wisconsin was the worst. mainly because that linebacker and I pretty much went helmet to helmet in that moment. So, but yeah, that was definitely the hardest hit that I took in college and of my whole career.
And then to follow up on just another random question, why the visor from the get-go? Like, I just ask, like, ever since I've played football, I always ask someone if they have a visor, like, why do you have a visor on?
So yeah. I had some medical reasons that I had to wear it. You know, that's, they made me wear it. I had never worn one until I got to college. And then I had some personal stuff, you know, some health reasons that I had to wear it.
Are you still going to wear it like in the pros as well? Is that still,
I didn't wear it this year. They kind of just say like, if you want it, you can wear it. You know, the thing with those visors is they get water in there, they get sweat. When it's cold out, they can fog up.
That's why I ask, because you don't see like a lot of quarterbacks because of that exact reason. Like, it can easily get foggy or wet, whatever. And since you have the option, I was just wondering, because I mean, you really don't see a lot of quarterbacks wear a visor. Like, I think it was week 3 for the Bears, and Nick Foles came in with some smoky visor, and then a series later he took it off. I mean, it looked sick while he had it on, but he took it off a series later. I mean, I was just wondering, because you don't really see a lot of quarterbacks. Some people say, oh, I don't want to get my eyes poked. Other people say, oh, it's just for this or that. So
yeah, the getting the eyes poked was primarily the main reason why I had to wear it. But yeah, now that I didn't wear it this year, I remember how nice it is to not have to worry about it fogging up or having to take it off in the middle of the game. I think the Penn State game was the only game that I had to, where I had actually some problems with it and had it taken off.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. I remember watching that. You did take it off.
It was getting foggy and you know, it was misting and it was getting water built up on it. So, I'm thankful now that I don't have to wear it. But I understand why I had to wear it in college.
I know you participated in the Manning camp during your college career. What was it like to get to be a part of that? And do you have a funny experience while you were at the camp with a Manning brother or with a coach? Or what was that experience like?
Yeah, I mean, it was really awesome. Just one, getting to go down there and meet, all the Mannings, and then a bunch of other, highly known people in the football industry around the country. But then two, just your peers that you play against or that you hear about or see, on ESPN. So on my flight, or not on my flight back, but as we're waiting in the airport on the way back, I'm eating lunch with Ian Book, Trevor Lawrence, Adrian Martinez. We all had like an hour and a half before our next flight. And we just sat down and talked and ate lunch. So, that was really cool. The oldest Manning brother, Cooper Manning, he's absolutely hilarious. He doesn't care who you are, doesn't care how good you are, what you've done. He'll come up and he'll make fun of you. I think that he just was super funny and made it super lighthearted. And I think that's why, it was as fun as it was. But then too, I mean, there was a lot of things that they had for, the chaperones or the college guys to go do. There was a dinner every night that we got to go to. And then I think people would be surprised with how much partying there is that people do. Like, there's a bar called Roxy's, I believe, in downtown Thibodaux, Louisiana, or wherever Nichols State College is. I forget the name of the town, but it's like, you get free drinks. They just have it open for anybody that's in the Manning camp to go there. You get a wristband and you just get free drinks. And, so people got pretty tuned up and had a good time. But with that being said, if you did something dumb, or made a fool of yourself, you were going to get made fun of the next day by the Mannings and by Cooper, especially. So
what was your draft experience like? Were you sitting there monitoring it, or were you just off doing something else and you got a call and it just happened?
Yeah, I was watching the draft. Unfortunately, I didn't go as high as I wanted to, but I understand, there's a lot of great players around the country. But when I got that call, I mean, it was awesome, especially getting a call from Minnesota. My hometown is actually only an hour away from Minneapolis. So it was really, really awesome to be that close to home, you know, be able to go home on my off days, you know, have my mom come to a few games. So it was just really cool to be close to home, you know, have that support. But as far as the whole process goes, it was really, really, really draining. You know, you go from playing in the Holiday Bowl on December 27th or whatever it is to being out. I went out to New Jersey to work with a quarterback coach, and I was out there like January 4th or something. So it was, I had like a week off, and then I was right into training. So, and then trained for 3.5 months. Well, really a month and a half until the combine, and then another month and a half for your pro day, which got canceled like 3 days before we were supposed to have it. And then you go right into OTAs. So, I mean, it was really, really stressful. And I was really happy when it was done, mainly because now I know where I'm going to be at. Now I can actually sit down and study. I don't have to think about, oh man, what type of questions are these coaches going to ask me to, you know, see how much football I know. Now I can actually just go out there and play football, you know, learn the offense that I'm going to be in, you know, and just get settled in. So I was, it was fun, exciting, but you know, I was definitely happy when it was done.
I was going to say, how did the process change once the pandemic hit? So you talked about your pro day getting canceled, but how did the preparation and meetings with teams and stuff change?
Yeah. You did a lot of phone calls, some Zoom calls with teams. Normally you would go, you can go work out for teams. Like you get a certain number of workouts where you can go to work out for teams. Those were all canceled. So I actually had two of them scheduled where I was going to go work out for a team, and they got canceled. So it really just turned into like a Zoom call, you know, where they'd sit me down, watch some tape, you know, ask me questions. But other than that, you know, the only thing that was really different once that happened was, so I wasn't allowed to train at Iowa anymore. I had to go home and train. So like they totally shut down the building. So I went back to my hometown. Thankfully I still had access to the gym. My dad's a teacher at the high school, so he was able to get me into the weight room. I had some buddies from high school that would catch balls for me. So normally I'd be throwing with guys that were training as well, but I just had to go home and you know, train that way and make the most of it. And try to do the best that I could. Yeah, I mean, and then once you got drafted, normally you would go and be in person for OTAs. Our OTAs were all online this year, so there was no physical aspect of it. It was all just, again, Zoom calls, learning the playbook, getting install, you know, and then making the most of it once camp came.
What was the strangest or most memorable question you got asked by a team in interviews or at the combine or in that process?
Yeah. So they really had two different like interview processes. One they called informal interviews and one they called formal interviews. So I had an informal interview, which is you're just sitting in like a big conference hall. You kind of just go around table to table and you get 15 minutes with the team. And I was meeting with the Raiders, the OC for the Raiders. And so what they would do is they'd install like some formations and then some protections and like one or two route concepts to you. And then they go in and ask you all these questions. Like they'd ask you some weird questions. Like, so do you smoke weed? It'd be like, no.
Yeah. I take bong rips all the time, coach. Yeah, like, I mean, like, seriously, no, that's why I'm here.
Yeah. It's like, no, I don't smoke. They'd ask you like if your parents are still together. They'd ask you like pretty much questions to see like if you're dysfunctional or not, like how, yeah, I mean, it was really weird. And then after they were done asking all those questions, they'd come back and be like, okay, so draw like this formation for me. And they had just installed it like 10 minutes earlier. So you had no time to study it. They went right into asking you like these really personal, weird questions. And then they'd be like, all right, teach it back to me. And I was doing really well. And then he goes, all right, give me this. I'm going to read you this play call and you got to say it back to me like I'm in the huddle. And he reads me off this play call and it means absolutely nothing to me. Absolutely nothing. It's like someone just read me a sentence in Chinese and I have to say it back to them perfectly the first time I heard it. And I couldn't do it. It took me like 5 minutes to do it, but I eventually got it. But that was definitely like the most memorable, you know, interview that I had there, or most interesting or weirdest or whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, I felt like an idiot when I was done, but after I was done, after I finally got it, he's like, no, you did a good job. You know, I know that like this doesn't mean anything to you right now. So like, don't worry about it. You did fine. You did just as well as everybody else. So, but in the moment I was freaking out like, oh my God, like this dude thinks I can't remember a play call. I can't do anything right. But yeah, that was definitely the most interesting slash weirdest slash most nerve wracking question that I had there.
Did you ever have a moment when you were actually, you never really have had like a moment to fully be in person with teammates? Cause I was just going to ask, like, are there people who play Madden on the team that want to play as themselves and strive to like make plays with themselves? And to follow up on that, have you played as yourself on Madden?
So I never really grew up playing video games. Okay. You know, if I play, like, it'll only be with friends, but I think you would have to go through like do the downloads and stuff for me to be actually on the game. I actually haven't played the newest Madden, so I haven't played one where I would be on there. But I don't know, just from like hearing people interact in the locker room, like I think I could tell you Justin Jefferson would play as himself and then Dalvin might play as himself. But other than that, I couldn't really tell you you know, if guys play as themselves or you know, who plays Madden or who plays Call of Duty or, but yeah, I mean, I think I've heard those two guys talk about it. I know the one thing Justin was trying to do is he said he was going to do the gritty until it got on Madden. So hopefully
it'll get on. I mean, eventually it definitely will. It definitely will eventually. I mean, the only thing Madden will do is they'll say they'll add it to the game, but then they'll make you buy next year's game, pay the whole extra $60 just to be able to have right. Justin doing that. That's exactly what they're going to do.
Right.
Has Justin taught you the gritty yet?
He has not.
Do you want to learn it? I can
pick it up.
Yeah.
I think I can pick it up. I'm not going
to
do it.
I was about to ask if you busted it out, if you ever like in a preseason game, if you would do it.
Maybe. Who knows? I mean, I think it'll be a spur of the moment decision, you know, on what a celebration would be for me. So,
I just have a few final questions for you. And speaking of hobbies, I read somewhere that you were really into woodworking.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw you build some coffee tables and things like that. What's been like the coolest thing you've built in your opinion, or like, what's the one thing that like you spend a lot of time on it and you look back at it and you're just like, I can't believe I built that.
Yeah. So my junior year of high school, I was in a woods class and I built, an entertainment center. You know, that took me a really long time. So the way that our football season in high school lined up with like the start of school is we ended up having like two or three games before our school even started. So like our school didn't start until after September 1st.
Oh, wow.
Because of the holiday. That was just a rule in Wisconsin. It's kind of a weird rule, but so I had actually broken my hand my junior year of high school, in the first game of the year. And then, so the first like month and a half of school, I'm trying to build this thing with like a cast on my hand and it actually turned out really well. I'm really proud of that one. That's definitely the coolest thing that I've built. The project that I started making my senior year, I was a little too ambitious and, you know, it's not finished yet, mainly because I haven't had the time to go back and finish it. But it's pretty much finished, but that entertainment center that I built was really cool and really special to me.
That's really cool. And you talked about, your pregame routine earlier. I wanted to ask you, post game, Hawks win, you want a good meal post game, where's your go-to spot, hangout spot, restaurant, Iowa City?
Yeah. So I was really fortunate. I had either my mom or my dad come to every single game that I started. And a lot of times my roommates, their parents and my parents would just make food or bring food. So like a lot of times we just hang out at our apartment But if we did go to eat, we'd go to Texas Roadhouse, we'd go to Buffalo Wild Wings out in Coralville, or we just like order pizza. We had Wig and Pen a few times. But thankfully, my mom would make some home cooked meals. She made this really good soup called cheeseburger soup. That's probably my favorite one that we've had. Otherwise, just grill soup, or we just get like steak from Texas Roadhouse or something like that.
So out of the four remaining quarterbacks in the playoffs, Josh Allen, Tom Brady, Mahomes, and Aaron Rodgers, for anyone that's living under a rock, if you could take like a trait or a feature from them, whether it's like Rodgers' cadence or like Mahomes' no look, cross the body pass, like from each of them, what would you take?
Yeah. I think from Mahomes and Josh Allen, definitely their arm strength. I mean, they can make any throw on the field. Tom, definitely take his mental aspect of the game. He's so on top of everything that he does, and so sharp with the mental aspect. And then Rodgers, I would say just his release and his ability to like throw the ball on the run and with his off platform throws that he makes. He just makes it look so effortless, and his release is so quick that, you know, he can do a lot of things, make a lot of throws that people wouldn't normally be able to make. But I mean, with that being said, you know, all of them are really great quarterbacks. And if I could have the same ability as any single one of them, you know, I think you'd be pretty well set. What I said with the, you know, the arm strength, the mental aspect, and then just the arm talent that Rodgers has with his ability to get the ball out. I don't think you can beat that, you know, with anybody else in the league.
My final question for you is, what does being an Iowa Hawkeye mean to you, and what is advice you have for current and future Hawkeyes?
Yeah, I owe a lot to the University of Iowa. Getting to play football and then set myself up for a career where I can be financially secure for the rest of my life. That's something that's super special. Not a lot of people get the opportunity to do. But then on top of it, get to go to school and not have to worry about, you know, student loans, having to pay back debt. That's something that again, not many people have the opportunity to do. So just the education and the athletic, you know, opportunities that I had, I owe myself to the University of Iowa for that. And then just some advice would just be to make the most connections you can. You never know who you're going to meet. And you never know who's going to come back to you in life. So, like I said earlier, I made a lot of great friends, made a lot of good relationships with coaches, former coaches, that are all around the country now. So just take advantage of every opportunity that you get, whether it be, going to that networking night. They had networking nights for us to do. And I was like, man, I do not want to go to this. It's just an extra thing on my plate. I want to go home. I want to sleep, or I want to go eat dinner somewhere. But looking back on it, it's probably one of the best things that I could have done, because I've met a bunch of great people. That's really the thing, is just take advantage of the opportunities that you have. Cause you never know what's going to come up in the future.
Sam, do you have any other questions?
I'll throw one more in there before we close out. And that was a great answer. In terms of advice, when you passed the quote unquote Iowa quarterback torch to Spencer Petras,
yeah,
what's been advice you gave to him throughout this season or before the season started?
Yeah, I was meaning to ask that. Yeah.
Just go out there and have fun. Like he's got a great arm. I think mentally he's up there with where I was at the end of my career, because he was under me for 2 years before he ever got the chance to step out on the field. So just go out there, have fun, be confident in your abilities. I don't know if you guys know, but he played at the same high school as Jared Goff did.
Yeah, he broke those records.
He broke like all of his records in high school. So like he can play. I just told him, like, go out there, have fun. You know, like, I know you're going to study. I know you're going to be prepared to go out there and play. Just go out there and play. Like what happens, like, let it happen. But, you know, as long as you're having fun, like, that's the biggest thing. That was always my thing, is like, once the fun of the game is gone, like it makes everything else suck so much more. Like when you're out there waking up early to go to lift and then go to practice, like, it sucks. But if you're having fun, you know, like that's what makes it worth it. So just have fun, you know, and then just be a great, great teammate. You know, I think people respect you for that more than they will for your on-field accomplishments.
Awesome.
I love that. And to everyone that's listening, like, this is without a doubt been one of my favorite podcasts, and we can't thank you enough for coming on. Like, seriously, this has been an awesome episode. Sam, do you have anything else to say?
No, I just want to thank you too. I mean, taking the time to do it. I know your season just ended, and obviously you're going to be getting back into preseason workouts and stuff. So just taking the time to come on and talk Iowa football with us and just take us through your career, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Of course. And as always, guys, not the same time, same place. We will see you guys later.